Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It is our weekly Q&A with Layla, which means we answer your questions, questions that you send us via radio program at AOL.com. With me today is Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin, known to many of you. She is my colleague at the Hoffman Center. We work together on a daily basis, providing a 1-2 punch, medical nutritional combo, working with challenging patients here in New York City. And so how are you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman, how are you? Trying to stay cool, actually.
That's right. So we're in sort of the middle of the month of the summer doldrums with, I think it's like a multi-day hot spell here in New York. Temperature
That's
gets
true.
Over 90, which is not such a big deal when you're out west, but here in New York, it's always accompanied by humidity and poor air quality.
And all that.
Yeah.
Right.
So there we go. Well, all right, feeling pretty good. I find it a little harder to tell patients to get on, rigorous diet programs, get them to start exercise, when the weather's hot and temptation
especially
looms
outside.
And
yeah.
Parties, barbecues, those umbrella drinks seem kind of appealing this time of year. But pretty soon we'll turn the corner into fall and it'll be time to re-up on your healthy resolutions. So we keep cranking away. I'm finding, for me, a strategy when it's hot, like this morning was really hot. So, I jumped in the pool. And in the pool, don't know the difference.
Perfect.
Some people think I'm in some, hillside mansion where I have my own, endless pool. No, I live in an apartment building here in New York City and, which happens to be nicely situated right next door to a YMCA, which has a wonderful pool. And, I got there at 6 o'clock in the morning. It was a great time to get to the pool because only the hardcore people are there.
Right.
There's about three or four hardcore people, two really prolific swimmers and a couple of senior citizens were in the pool at that time.
There you go.
So, so I managed to get myself a good workout. So, it's a bit of a slow news week. I mean, we sometimes touch upon relevant news stories of the week. Why don't we just jump into questions? We have a little more time to answer as many questions as we can.
Let's jump into questions here. We've got an email from Paul. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Can you please provide some advice on treating gray hair? And what is your take on the herb Heshowu, which we have in our dispensary?
Yeah.
And apart from using hair dyes, are there any natural ways to manage or reverse gray hair? Well, I want to say to Paul, if there was, I would know about it. I would buy stock in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
And I'd take tons of it.
Yeah. No question.
Because I'm one of those people who went prematurely gray.
Right.
As did my mother.
Right.
So, yeah. Well, apparently our hair color comes from a pigment called melanin. And what happens is as we age, the melanin is reduced, which is why our hair is turning gray and ultimately white, meaning there's no melanin left. So what can cause gray hair? Hydrogen peroxide. If you're a woman who's ever dyed her hair in the early 60s or 70s and used hydrogen peroxide or even a product called Sun-In, which was popular with some of my more blonde girlfriends, that's something.
Okay.
But,
why? Because it actually damages the melanin-producing...
Yeah, it bleaches it.
It bleaches it. Not just temporarily, but it actually may cause... Because, some people are blonde, but then you see their dark roots. But what you're saying is that there may be some long-term harm to the hair follicles that produce melanin. Subsequently they stop producing melanin.
Right. Our hair cells actually make hydrogen peroxide as well.
Oh, okay.
Especially as we get older, and that amount increases.
Huh.
And that's what can ultimately bleach out our pigment, turning our hair gray and then white.
Okay. And that's that's interesting because, let's think about it. All cells produce hydrogen peroxide, or certainly, white blood cells especially, as a means of killing pathogens, harmful agents, but sort of a waste product or an intentional killing agent. And so I guess the reason that hydrogen peroxide production gets increased is because the checks and balances, the antioxidant defense mechanisms, may be curtailed. So, yeah. And they fail, and then the peroxide may cause the damage. So that's interesting. You know, I always thought that there was some element of autoimmunity associated with gray hair, because for me, premature gray hair is often associated with hypothyroidism, another autoimmune condition.
Yeah. Yeah. So not just the shedding of hair or thinning of hair, but also gray hair.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And it is said by researchers, it's just what you said, Dr. Hoffman, that premature graying, they may have a higher level of pro-oxidants and not enough antioxidants.
Okay.
So that could be a reason. Mm-hmm. But there's some good news. Scientists at NYU Langone, they isolated a protein called WNT, which coordinates pigmentation between the melanin-producing cells, the melanocytes, and another type of stem cell that can guide the development of hair follicles. So, they tried something in black mice, and this may be a possible cure. Hmm. That's one thing.
You know, we've cured another so many study, things in mice. Yeah. We've cured, paralysis. We've cured cancer. All these things are amazing. But sometimes, and now gray hair. But sometimes the research either takes a while to translate to humans or doesn't translate at all. So,
right.
A caution.
Right. Yeah. There is another study that's linked to the hair, gray hair due to a buildup from hydrogen peroxide, and that there is a UVB-activated compound called PCKUS,
okay,
which could reverse the hydrogen peroxide buildup and effectively, quote, cure gray hair. But none of this is ready for prime time.
Okay, all these are experimental drug therapies. Yeah, in terms of natural therapies, first of all, I am endowed with very dark hair, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm beginning to get some gray, but it's sort of a little bit of pepper and salt. And I noticed that many of my family members, particularly on my mother's side, retain dark hair well into their 60s and 70s.
Mm.
And so I think there's a hereditary component. I also think, I take an enormous complement of vitamins and nutrients. Some patients report that by taking a B-complex vitamin, their hair darkens. And one of the reasons for that is PABA, para-aminobenzoic acid, is a sort of an obscure B vitamin. It's considered a B vitamin.
Yeah.
And PABA may have something to do with pigmentation pathways.
Yeah, I tried all that.
Been there, done that. Yeah.
I've been there and done that. And that was even in my 30s. Yeah. Yeah. Well, apparently, the granny hair look is in. If anybody has noticed, there are a lot more people donning platinum hair color.
Yeah.
Or silver hair color.
Right.
And,
I think it's a good look.
I'm not ready for that.
It's a good look on a mature woman, very nicely styled, silver gray hair.
Exactly.
It can be nice.
Right. Right. Yeah.
My grandfather had a theory.
Yeah.
My grandfather had a theory. Uh-huh. He used to take me to the racetrack, when he was babysitting for me. He used to take me to, my parents wanted to, have a date. They would park me with my grandfather. And my grandfather, for some reason, thought it was an appropriate amusement for a young kid to take him to the racetrack, which I thought was kind of a weird place to go to. He had a theory about betting on horses. He would always bet on the gray horse. When they have that procession of horses before the race, and he would go, "Oh, there's a gray horse. I'm going to bet on that horse." And I'm not sure it worked out well for him, but he thought that was a good way to pick out gray horses.
Wow.
So clearly that suggests that grayness did not necessarily have to do with other degenerative changes in the body necessarily. Although, it's been said that sometimes people go gray or go white overnight when they're subject to stress, like very quick, changes related to shock or stress. And there may be something to that, but it is not necessarily a sign of, ill health.
Right.
It may be just an isolated phenomenon, like, okay, you could be healthy, but you might need reading glasses and, have failing eyesight.
Yeah. And with regard to the Chinese herbs, he shou wu,
Yeah.
I think I've not seen or read that it can actually treat the gray hair, although it may be that you have to start taking it long before ever turning gray. But I've heard it useful for those with thinning hair to restore some thickness.
Yeah. And
so
you know what what I've heard, and I don't speak Chinese by any means, but I've heard that roughly translated, Ho Shu Wu means Mr. Wu has dark hair. But there's a little bit of a metaphor there, because the meaning of that is not necessarily, okay, this is the only thing it's good for. It makes your hair dark, so, you know, like dark shoe polish or something, or dye. It is a tonic herb that's very popular in China that restores vigor and vitality. So the connotation of dark hair is that you're, you know, vigorous and youthful and vital. And that, so, you know, hey, even if it doesn't turn your hair darker, it might help you, you know, in a way to enhance energy and stamina.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, apart from using hair dyes, Paul, I think we're out of luck. You either have to use hair dyes or decide to go au naturel.
Yeah.
And my personal opinion is it looks way better on men than many women. That is my personal opinion. I'm just speaking of myself.
It depends. So. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's true. I don't get no respect because I got to, you know, I look like, well, like I haven't really earned my, my street cred yet because my hair isn't gray.
It's not gray. It's not gray. Yeah. So, Paul, thank you very much for your question. But the good news on hair dye is, no longer do we have to deal with ammonia-containing hair dyes, even though there are still those that are out there. They're not, they're still toxic, but they're not nearly as toxic as they were when I had to start using them.
Well, you know, let's actually speak to the issue of hair dye. There actually is a correlation in some studies between the use of hair dye and certain cancers like lymphoma, because the aniline dyes, which are actually very old dyes, they were discovered in Germany, and they were one of the first examples of how they took petroleum, and they, through, you know, they had really wonderful chemists, organic chemists in Germany in the late 1800s, and they came up with ways to modify petroleum products to create aniline dyes. And that's why Germany really went to the forefront of the textile industry, because they had these wonderful dyes, because in the past you had vegetable dyes that didn't, you know, they weren't, the colors weren't that bright and they would easily wash out. And with these new synthetic dyes, you had a whole range, a whole new palette. But the dyes turned out to be carcinogenic because they were petroleum based.
Yeah.
So these aniline dyes actually found their way into hair technology. And so women were applying, in effect, petroleum byproducts to their hair. And in addition, there was some connection between them and autoimmune diseases, such as scleroderma.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so
and
not
I've,
great.
I've read particularly the darker hair dyes are more problematic.
Yes, yeah.
Health-wise than the lighter. Just my luck.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Well, got to pick and choose your battles, I guess.
Yeah. Well, you know, then there's the you know, the health food store kind that are henna-based products.
Yes.
And presumably you've been there, done that. And those products, you know, they can give you a good look, but they wash out very quickly. And then you see your roots and so on.
Very resistant gray like mine, my hair laughs at a product like that.
Right.
So it just doesn't work. And I've seen the women in my family use it, and they've got twinges of blue and purple. And I'm not going there.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, my.
Well, okay, so
All right.
we'll reserve a discussion of precisely your hair dye technology for the hair dye show, Intelligent Hairdressing. Which, so that's not really our mission statement. We won't.
Yeah.
We won't talk. People can contact you privately.
I rely heavily on my hairdresser Kelly. So.
Okay. Okay. People can contact you privately for messaging about that subject. All right.
Okay.
Next.
Paul, thank you for your question.
Next question.
Next question, please. This is from Stephen. Stephen writes, dear Layla and Dr. Hoffman, allow me first to compliment you for your excellent podcast. Both your Q&A and Layla weighs in. the information you provide never fails to be valuable and the presentation engaging.
Wait a minute. He doesn't like my podcast? You. He just likes it when I'm joined by you and your podcast.
He does like your podcast. Okay.
I'm feeling a little dissed.
This.
Yeah.
Steve says, over the years, I have learned of the benefits of sauna. Could you tell your audience about infrared sauna in terms of its relative benefits, risks, safety, and the like?
Okay. Let's talk first about sauna. And sauna is proposed as a way to detoxify. And actually, interestingly, the idea is very ancient, you know, because they've had the sweat lodges for, you know, millennia.
Yes.
And, you know, this is actually an ancient ritual by many tribes, Native Americans, and peoples all over the world. So they must have assigned some value to it, you know, perhaps not understanding the scientific underpinning. A relaunch of that actually comes from a very interesting source. L. Ron Hubbard, the founder of Scientology, actually rebooted the idea of sauna as a means of detoxifying. So, you know, gotta say, like, you know, regardless of what you think of Scientology, this guy was a sort of a visionary in many ways, and he had a whole protocol for detoxifying. It included saunas with exercise where you sweated, and also using niacin to cause flushing, presumably to bring toxins to the surface. And, you know, I don't know how scientifically validated that is, but actually in the aftermath of 9/11, the Scientologists made a pitch in Manhattan to offer free detoxification to some of the Ground Zero responders. And they showed dramatic pictures of seeming toxins exuding from their skin after, you know, a series of treatments, as if you were really sort of melting the toxins out of the fat depots where they're stored in the body through heat. So there's a claim that that's beneficial. Now, a lot of people, A, they can't afford, you know, private saunas, or B, can't afford a membership, or it's inconvenient to get to a sauna. So they've been offering infrared saunas, which are basically, it kind of looks like a heat wrap kind of thing, or a lamp, you know.
It's a heat lamp. It's a heat lamp. It's infrared heaters that help to emit infrared light, which is,
and of course, infrared is heat. That's a heat wave. That's a pure heat wave. In other words, an ultraviolet you know, does not about heat, but it's like the rays that cause tanning or skin damage. Infrared.
It's more like being in an oven. It's by conduction and convection.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So. Some claim of health benefits were for arthritis, maybe pain relief.
Sure.
But you know, any heat, I think of a heating pad or something for heating sore muscles or to relieve pain.
Yeah.
I think heat is beneficial that way because it helps with vasodilation as well.
Exactly.
So that might be something.
It promotes circulation. It may enhance the flexibility of the joints. Also, there's an argument to be made for hyperthermia as being a treatment for infections and cancer. You know, our body's natural response to infection is to raise the temperature.
Yeah.
And in so doing, that may have an inhibitory effect on certain bacteria or foreign invaders. And it certainly puts the body into kind of a circulatory, amped-up state so that white blood cells can rush to the site of infection.
So. Fever.
Yeah, the fever reaction, which unfortunately we suppress with Tylenol and Advil and aspirin, which may ultimately prolong illnesses.
Unless it goes too high, right?
Which could prolong illnesses because we blunt the body's defenses. So, you know, one of the things that I do, sometimes if I have a cold, I can't exercise, I'll just go to the gym and, bring a towel and a water bottle. And I'll sit in either the steam room or the sauna because I think it's doing me some good. I mean, the steam may help open up my nasal passages or my breathing passages in the lungs, bronchioles, or just the heat itself may help to accelerate my body's response to the infection. And in addition, you know, there's some evidence that you get a little bit of a workout when you do that. So, you know, you maybe don't feel like running on the treadmill, but I do notice that when I sit in the heat and it gets pretty hot, you know, I prolong the session, 15, 20 minutes, my pulse rate goes up. So in effect, you're getting kind of a cardiovascular workout by sitting in the heat. However, for people who are on certain medications, they don't tolerate heat very well. There's be psychiatric medications, certain blood pressure medications.
Yeah.
Those medications impair your body's air conditioning system. And you can get, sort of a meltdown, a heat meltdown. It's dangerous. And, also for people who are elderly or have diabetes, or congestive heart failure, bad heart disease, it's too much of a challenge to their circulatory system. It's a little bit like a stress test. So they have to be careful with exposure to that. I think the best way to do a sauna is to hydrate well in the sauna, is to bring a water bottle in and, put a lot of ice in there.
And hydrate while you're in there,
Yeah, and just drink. And you can go through a whole big, sports water bottle, while sitting in there, because you're sweating it out. But that's one way to help your body tolerate it more without suffering from dehydration.
Right. Wow. Okay. Benefits of sauna. Steve, thank you very, very much for your question. All right.
I think this is a good point at which to pause, because we generally divide these podcasts into two parts. So give us a preview of what we're going to hear from in part two.
Is H. pylori contagious?
Okay. Good question. H. pylori, the bacteria that's responsible for ulcers and gastritis, lives in the stomach. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin, and a reminder that Layla and I practice together. Patients who come to see me for a medical consultation also get the benefit of a nutritional consultation. But for those of you who like your doctor, want to keep your doctor, perhaps it's logistically challenging for you to get to New York to see me, which is a prerequisite of a medical consultation at the Hoffman Center, you can get a consultation about nutrition via the phone with Layla. You'll share your health information, your test results with her, and she'll formulate a nutritional plan using the principles that we often discuss here on Intelligent Medicine. So you too can participate. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine Podcast.